One, two, three, and start. Hey, Edward, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
The famous opening question. Good, yeah. Good as well. Today, I wanted to discuss about VPNs.
Yeah.
We've been using OpenVPN a lot in the past for client implementations and so on, but recently we started using WireGuard a lot more. So yeah, let's dive into it.
Yeah, I just looked up like when they released OpenVPN. So apparently it's already from 2001. So this technology is 23 years old.
23 years old.
I don't think it's like, it's still, well, they still update their crypto algorithms. So it's not that it's unsecure or something, right? So, but
no.
The protocol itself, like how you connect, it's all from time long gone.
Yeah, absolutely. But due to that, it has a very wide install base. I think a lot of people are using it.
So I think like I started using OpenVPN only a few years after it was released, I remember. Back then you had like IPsec, OpenSwarm or something in Linux.
Oh yeah.
But that was quite difficult to set up. And then, then I started using OpenVPN for my home network or something, just to test and to see how to make connection and then have a server and then make an OpenVPN connection to see how it would be encrypted. And then I think once we started working in companies, startups, we started to use something like OpenVPN server, or what's it called? Like from OpenVPN.net?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The application server.
The application server, yeah. So then you have like a front end. And then what did we do? I think you could use, what is this protocol called to log in users? They had like some old protocol that you would have to use. It didn't support OIDC or SAML or anything.
Like Radius or something.
Radius,
like that.
Yeah. Radius, yeah. That was all. So we would connect with Radius, right? So you would have a Radius server with your users to authenticate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is how you did on user authentication. You still have to work with certificates, right? So you have a CA certified authority.
Signing it,
yeah.
Yep. And if you hosted it yourself, it was a pain in the ass to onboard people, offboard people.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff. Yep.
Yeah. So often you start with OpenVPN, then you're like this is a pain. So you use the paid version, then you have to use Radius but then at some point people were like, okay, now everything is we have an identity provider, OIDC or SAML, so let's integrate with that, and then we kind of created our own tooling at some point. I mean, I think it's 5 to 8 years ago now, something that. It's already quite old. I actually did, the first version. Like basically what we would do is we would write a plugin that would just go to... Actually, first, I think we just went to the OneLogin API. So we were using OneLogin as our identity provider already like for 10 years or something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it would just go to OneLogin to see if this person was authenticated. But then at some point we were like, okay, but we don't want to deal with the certificates. We don't want to manage the certificates because we would still have to issue the certificates and then they would kind of log in to the login module. So we create like a small front end, but it was not really a front end, it just didn't do anything. So we had like an OIDC protected front end that would authenticate the users using this OIDC endpoint from one login. If you are authenticated, then the front end server would sign the certificate, create a certificate, sign a certificate, and give the one
push
login.
It to you. Yeah,
then you give the OpenVPN config to the user. Then the user could log in. Could download, start a profile with a VPN client. Then it would get a login box, log in, and then it could connect. But yeah, this technology is quite old, and it's slow. The connecting is slow, right? So like,
that's a big difference with WireGuard. Like
yeah, the issue arises when you have to switch VPNs. Like, for example, we would set up a VPN per environment, because if you want full isolation, you need kind of a VPN per environment, because you would say, I need to be on the developer environment. I need to, let's say, want to contact MySQL. It's a private IP address, so I'm going to connect with the OpenVPN VPN. Now I can reach this MySQL server. But then later, you want to maybe go to staging, because you want to test something on staging, and then you have to stop your VPN, start your VPN staging, and then like, it takes forever. Like, the authentication is very slow. Like, I think like 5 or 10 seconds, and it doesn't really sound long, but when you have to switch multiple times per day, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Or you have to like create a hub and spoke architecture where you can connect to one, but that kind of defeats the purpose that you can hop between environments.
Yeah, right? I'm not a big fan of that. No. I'd rather have isolation on a network level and no holes that you have to then punch through.
So don't, if when you're testing your MySQL upgrade scripts or whatever, or like database-based, when you're changing tables and stuff like that, database migrations, and like you're connected to the wrong VPN, like stuff like that. It's just like nice boundaries as well.
Exactly. Like if you have only one VPN, which is also a valid use case, these mistakes just tend to happen more because you always connect to the same VPN, and if you have to switch the VPN, like you're in a different network because the DNS names are often similar.
Absolutely. It's just one piece of the whole onioning layers.
Yeah. I mean, it can still make sense to only have one VPN. I wouldn't say
no, definitely.
Bad practice or something. They're like, okay, you have a VPN, now you can also go on the developer network somehow. I mean, in some companies you had to like execute something. I remember you execute something
to get additional privileges.
Yeah, or we'd like open the firewall so you could go to the developer network or something. So companies often have like, not everyone can access the production servers or not the developer servers, or like you can go on the VPN to access maybe some services that all the employees need to be on, but then you still want to indeed grant access.
Well, it's just like super simple to do, to just set up two in comparison to what you're mentioning now. That's more like for enterprise companies, I think, like to be able to do that. Like just setting up two. When I set it up in that case, I think it saved a lot of developers a lot of headaches as well. With not being
setting up one, you mean?
Yeah, like no, setting up two, basically. But like it depends on what company you're working with, right? Like two is also additional cost. But it's like you say, like it's a valid use case to just use one, because then you can open all the network traffic to that one specific entry point and focus on that instead of like whitelisting everywhere on MongoDB Atlas in the application. Everywhere, like you have to manage those IP addresses and stuff like that. So it's definitely a valid use case to just be able to have one entry point. Absolutely.
Also with zero trust, there's an argument, okay, zero trust, so you can have access to the network layer, but I think zero trust. I mean, there's just multiple use cases. But since only a couple of years, I think, WireGuard has been added to the kernel, right? So I think the big difference now is with WireGuard that OpenVPN is like still software. You need to download the software and start the server, and then the server runs. With WireGuard, it's quite interesting. It's actually completely integrated within the Linux kernel now. So it is already there. The only thing that you need is some tooling to make changes to it. And then you can just see that once you do a manual implementation of WireGuard, okay, you have a server configuration, you have cloud configuration. Once you have these two things set up, connecting to it is not like key exchange that need to happen, or like with OpenVPN, it just like boom connects in 1 second or less than 1 second, and you can start using it. And that's just the nice thing about WireGuard.
Absolutely. The first time you use it, it's like,
am I connected?
Is it working?
And also, I don't have the points here with me, but okay, more modern, faster, uses less resources. And also, like, the encryption algorithm is quite interesting. Like, I was looking at those encryption algorithms. Like, it uses a completely different encryption algorithm than the RSA keys. Yeah, so it's all more modern.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, it's a very smaller code base in terms of vulnerabilities and stuff like that. If you have open VPN application server versus WireGuard, of course, the application server is a whole shebang to manage it around it. But nonetheless, like, I think OpenVPN was like WireGuard has like 10% of the code base of OpenVPN, for example.
Oh, yeah.
It's way, way smaller. So.
Oh, that's quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so like directly integrated into like the kernel. So in that sense, it's much easier for passing security audits and stuff like that, or having CVEs. It doesn't use that much because it's such a small code base, right? So
yeah, I'm a big fan of not using too big code base, and also like open SSH, like all this tooling from a long time ago, they all use the OpenSSL libraries that every year there's at least one vulnerability you have to upgrade and so on and so on. And maybe less lately, but I mean there were a lot of vulnerabilities. And this is like that they use a completely different algorithm. I find very interesting. Like just kind of what would we do if we just start from zero? Forget about OpenSSL. Let's just think. Like how like what could be more secure or equally secure and just not use these old libraries that have been written in C such a long time ago that might contain vulnerabilities. So that's what I find very interesting. But what is obviously lacking is a good front end. So we start experimenting with Firezone. So which is one of the front ends. So they first had a free version that you could just install on an instance. So we tested a little bit with that. It integrates with OIDC, lets you download the profile, just like we would be able to do with our OpenVPN setup. But they already sunsetted that product actually. So now they only have a SaaS product. It's a Y Combinator company. So they obviously don't really have much benefit in maintaining an open source free software product if the idea of the company is really to build a SaaS product.
exactly yeah. Like the investor want to see some money in the end of the day as well,
which is reasonable.
Good, absolutely. We also have to pay our bills, you know, like I'm not arguing that.
There's Then what actually disappeared now is like an easy version, just like we had with our OpenVPN front end, which was not even a front end, so that would just be usable by our clients or ourselves. But what is really missing is just like if I want on prem a VPN, not a SaaS product, or on Amazon on Azure, and I just want to have it running very quickly, but I don't want to manage the users because WireGuard doesn't know about users. It just knows about a private key and a public key, right? So I don't want to manage the users. Users need to be able to download their config file easily using an identity provider, an external identity provider, something like Azure AD or OneLogin or Okta. It exists. There's definitely some software, but nothing that is easily set up on an instance. So in the last weeks, we spent some time on developing a product like that. So we just took like the ideas we had with our OpenVPN server, like the features that we were using there, and how would that translate to WireGuard. And I already had this in mind a longer time ago because even before I looked at WireGuard, but I was never I was like, I will never make an WireGuard equivalent that I did for OpenVPN, because it's just going to be too much work.
Yeah.
So then I started it, and indeed, it was just too much work.
It was too much work. No, absolutely. I was waiting for that cliffhanger. No, that's absolutely the case.
It just doesn't do much.
Exactly.
I mean, with OpenVPN, you have a client, and indeed it's slow, but yeah, it's like it's going to give you an IP address. With WireGuard, you need to know what the IP address is of the client, because, you know, it doesn't really manage it. You just have like a concept of peers. So there's a lot of in OpenVPN that actually is managed for you, that's not managed in WireGuard anymore. So if you want to create a client or UI, there's actually a lot of work that needs to be done. And if you want to make it like a product that you can just say, like, it's a package, I install it, and now I should be able to start without entering like commands and looking how everything works. I just want to use WireGuard. There's another layer of work that you need to do, because, but like, there's things like, what is your default gateway interface? What is your host name of this server? What is like all these things that other software says, okay, here's our configuration manual, here's our installation manual, you need to define all these points. But what if you just want to like have something that just runs and
that just works.
Like, that just works, yeah. You know, because this information is already available on the instance. You don't really need to input like the interface that you want to use and all this kind of stuff. So what we did is we built the software that will just take the good defaults, which are changeable later on, can integrate with ORDC, so that you can have users. So it also has a local user database in case you don't want to use ORDC. And then you can then download your profile. And that's it. I mean, that's the first version. So the first version cannot do much. It looks even ugly, relatively ugly.
I think it looks okay. And it doesn't need to do much, right? Like, it's the first version. And it like actually does a lot. In that sense, if you see like what the basic functions are like, so in that sense, there's a lot there.
It's just crazy how much code is necessary to write such basic functionality. But it's just because you need to manage everything yourself. The IP address space, the WireGuard is just like, I have a private key, public key on my server. There can be a peer, which is like a connection. This other peer also has a private and a public key. You have routes between them. That's it. I mean, what IP address is linked with what public key? You need to manage yourself. And I don't think it will change. It just, this is how it is integrated in the kernel. So
that's how it's intended. Yeah, absolutely.
This is how it's intended. Yeah,
that's how it also gets such a small code base.
Yes. Yeah. So whatever extra you want to write on there, that's your thing. So we are planning to release this on Amazon Marketplace, AWS Marketplace, and the Azure Marketplace. So if you need an easy way to use a WireGuard VPN, you should just be able to like click, start it, and then you should
manage
see the
users. Yeah,
and manage users. So I was actually thinking, I have this latest development version deployed. Not sure if it works completely because the code
live demo stress
changed. Yeah, live demo stress. So I can demo it. I don't know how far I will get.
If it breaks, it breaks. It's beta.
Yeah, if it breaks, I will just do some live coding to fix it.
Yeah, like all of a sudden the voice changes and like you see like cuts in the video and it works again.
I'll have another t-shirt. See?
Yeah, exactly.
Two screens, suddenly I have a t-shirt.
3 days later. No.
So let me share my screen. So let me close all this stuff. Minikube, oh my god. So I have this Ubuntu machine here. There's not really much on it. I think I just installed the WireGuard tooling and my binaries. So the WireGuard tooling is like WG. So there's no WireGuard.
No, apparently.
There's no WireGuard as in it's in the kernel, so you cannot put it off, but there's no key configured. So now I'm just gonna start the two services that I need. I have like a service that runs at root that manages the WireGuard stuff, and then the REST API, which doesn't run as root for security reasons. And this is interesting. I didn't know this existed. It's like something new in more modern kernels. Mm-hmm. You can set set cap to say this binary can bind to ports under 1024. So you don't need to run as root. That's interesting. So now it's running. So the VPN is now configured. So I have an interface VPN. There's a public key. There's a private key. And it listens to the port. So there's no clients yet, but the VPN is running. So then the REST interface needs to be HTTP. Yeah. There so when go. It starts up, it's not going to allow everyone to just start up. So you need to get the code, just like in Jenkins. I got it from Jenkins. The only downside is that we don't have TLS yet. So there's also going to be a command to reset it over SSH because that's more secure.
Good idea.
But this is the secret. Scott, this is a secret. So yeah, you pass it unsecurely, which doesn't really matter for a secret, but it matters here if you set your password. So either you take a simple password now, or you reset it later, or you use it over SSH because this goes clear text over the wire. So now I just set the admin password. And now we have a login box where we can log in. And then we are logged in as admin. You see how snappy it is? It's like I wrote it in Golang. It's like it's executing less than a
couple of microseconds. Yeah.
So we have a status active users. This is something I still need to complete because it's not that there are 5 active users. We have the VPN connections. So we are logged in as an admin user. So I'm not allowing the admin user to create a new connection. You need to create a user first. So you can actually create a user here.
Makes sense.
We are the admin user. You can suspend the user, change the password, delete the user. But what you want to really do is you want to configure ORDC.
Yeah.
To configure ORDC, you need to have TLS. So first you want to configure TLS. And this is also what I find interesting. So Golang has a Let's Encrypt integration.
Yeah.
So if I just do a submit, then I should have HTTPS. So US VPN. So we have HTTPS now.
Bam.
Like, just like that. It's like,
crazy.
It generates the private key, goes to Let's Encrypt, says I want TLS on this host name. Let's Encrypt reaches out over the HTTP interface to get the token. Like, this is just a library in Golang. And the default library, even, I think. It's in not in the core Golang, but like developed by Google or something. So now we have HTTPS. So these are already like
so
quite amazing.
Like in OpenVPN, that's like downloading the PEM file and all that for integrating it with HTTPS. In the Open Application Server, it was like that was a pain in the ass in the past.
Yeah, but Let's Encrypt is now. I mean, when you're talking like when we were using this server,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe they have integration with Let's Encrypt now. But you know, just that it's with a modern programming language, it's actually not that much work to have it integrated. That's why it's so easy. So now we can actually integrate ORDC. So ORDC connection like Azure AD, I tested with Azure AD or OneLogin, like VS OneLogin. So what you need, client ID, client secret, and the discovery URI. So we have in our applications, we have a VPN. Just have to make sure the token endpoint is paused for some reason, which I find interesting because even if you don't put it on paused, the endpoint here, the well-known, it will still say that it can do paused even. Yeah, because otherwise I could check. You know, if there's no post, I can do another way. But for some reason, it says you can do post, but then this select box was not giving was not on post, was like basic or something, and then didn't work. I mean, I could implement basic authentication as well, but you know, but it's just to have them post, I guess. So client secret, I will rotate all these secrets after the call, so I will not blur them. Not that you have access. You could have access to our VPN if I would keep it configured like this. So the name, one login, client ID, client secret, the scope, open ID, email profile, save. So this gives us the redirect URI. And then I can go to configuration. So I'm also using this for localhost. Localhost can have HTTP, but otherwise it needs to be HTTPS, I think. Yeah, you see HTTPS described. Save this. And then now I should be able to log in. So if I do log out, log in with one login. And I'm logged in with, I'm already logged in with one login. So now I'm a user. I could assign also admin privileges to this user. So now I can say I need a new VPN connection, download a new config. And every time you download a new config, I don't store the private key on the server. So every time you download it, it generates a new private key. So that I don't store any private keys information on the REST server.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, so now I should be able to connect, but I changed a lot of code, so I'm not sure if that part would work, but I can show you what happened on the server. So if you have, again, a look, now you have a peer.
Yeah, and with an allowed IP list. Nice.
Yeah. So now you allow this IP here. We're using pre-shared key. This is the public key. So this public key should match with the config. I will try to connect it just to see if it works. Yeah. It doesn't work. So then I would need to go to my client. So you need to download, and it's in the App Store, the official WireGuard client.
Yeah.
You import a tunnel. Not sure if...
Maybe it was named already that way.
Connection one. Connection one is here. So we can actually see that this public key here matches the public key here.
Yeah.
We are on this IP address. So this IP address is what is allowed. We don't do forwarding yet. So I need to test still. So we're just going to create like... a route to the VPN server so we can ping one IP address.
For testing purposes, that's efficient.
So latest handshake now, so actually it works. See, because there is a handshake.
Boom.
So did you see how quick it connected?
Yeah.
So I press activate and this is connected. Yeah. And then it says latest handshake. So now I should be able to ping. Yeah, and I can ping this server.
So one ping request to connect, like the duration, crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't know that because I'm in Austin, Texas, right? So I didn't know that the latency between Austin, Texas, and New York, Virginia, right? Because that's where I use
one. North Virginia, yeah.
45 milliseconds. Like when you are in Europe, 45 milliseconds is like outside Europe.
Yeah, exactly. That's like when I ping it. It was something like that. It was like
90.
Yeah,
it's crazy like how far, how big the United
States
US
is, right? Absolutely, like, because like it's only half like the distance from like North Virginia to Belgium. It's like I don't think Texas is half of...
Exactly, like Austin, Texas, halfway is like somewhere. You have Boston and a little bit more north. You have like, that's like halfway somewhere.
It's crazy. Big run country.
Awesome. Yeah, it's four hours to fly to New York. And then from New York to London would be what? 7 hours? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
So if you a bit more north, then it's like halfway.
I just looked it up. No Let's Encrypt for the open up for the access server OpenVPN.
Those are the nice things, right? So like I did actually I removed all my config before, like it was no config. It like On AWS, you have endpoints that you can check, like what is your host name, what is your private IP address. There's code to check, like what is your default route that goes to the internet. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do that the code can do for you that you don't need to do. But yeah, you should be able to override it. So if I go back to our VPN server tab and I log in again as admin. Yeah, so this the host name you can get yourself. But then, for example, here, if you want to route all traffic, then you would have to say, I want to route, the client route needs to be 000/0, which is everything to the client has submitted. Then it will go in the config file. And then when the client downloads the profile again, it will have this.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can also then say, something I still need to implement is to make sure that we keep on refreshing the YDC token, so if the user then gets deleted, we immediately remove the WireGuard peer configuration so that the config doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
But you can also just say, like, if you need to fire someone leaving the company, you can just suspend the user. So even though OIDC user would be able to suspend, configuration goes away, and the user's not connected anymore.
That's awesome. Those are like those features that make life a lot easier, and also for security reviews and stuff like that, it's just way easier than having to dig through all the OpenVPN certificates manually and delete, hopefully, the correct one. Like if the sysadmin named it correctly and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I think ORDC is the main game changer, because you can say, okay, this user needs to be an admin. So my ORDC user is now an admin. And then you can say disable local auth. So then because you actually, well, it said you send this password unencrypted, but actually it doesn't really matter, because in general, if you use OIDC, you will disable local auth anyway. So this is for these couple of minutes, you will have this admin user, disable local auth, you have no admin user anymore. Your admin user is actually the user in OIDC. And then still, if you, like, there's a reset admin password command, if you then lock yourself out to reset it. So, like, basic functionality really still was a lot of work, but it's like the most basic functionality that you would need. And then it's just like two binaries. That's or maybe if you want to change the password, three binaries. Yeah, and the rest is a kernel integration. So it's easy to install. There's not, compared to the OpenVPN, it's not a lot of code. It's fast. There's almost no dependencies.
Future. Yeah, absolutely.
Like even the front end has almost no dependencies. Like I'm this no dependency person, you know.
It looks like it as well. No, no, just kidding.
Where's my VS Code? Can I open like a new window somewhere? So if you let me just close everything. Close all. And then close all this. So if you have a look at the Go mod file, what is in there? A JWT library, which is used by everyone. A UID library, crypto library, something to parse the JWKS files, and then something to manage WireGuard.
Yeah.
And then these are like default CoLi libraries. So there's not much that you need to write something like this. Even though OIDC integration, you don't really need much. It's just a few endpoints that you need to call.
Absolutely.
Same for, and I was quite surprised, for the web app, you can also keep it very low code or low dependencies. So the package.json. So I'm using Mantine. I don't know if you pronounce it correctly. So this is like the new Bootstrap. So this is very easy to create UI elements. And then React says like, oh, you should use a framework, Next.js. But then you see so many people like, first people like, oh yeah, I want to use Next.js. And then everyone's like, oh, it's so bloated. So you don't really have to use a framework.
Nope.
They now have, instead of Webpack, I don't know if you're familiar with Webpack, but now they have Vite, like the French, fast.
Yeah.
Like you just say Vite with React and it just works so much better. Basically the dependencies here are Vite, TypeScript, React, access to make HTTP calls, and not even that much, you know. And then if I look at my Angular projects or all the other things that we did in the past, if you write like this, there's almost nothing to maintain. And you still have all these nice components, right, to build your UI, Mantine, yeah. React.
Yeah, exactly. It already looks usable. It's not that it's something ugly or whatever.
yeah, indeed.
Which is crazy, actually, that it works that way.
And also something interesting I found when writing it. I don't know in Golang if you know, but if you go to the WireGuard code, PKG, and then the WireGuard code. So you can build code, and maybe this one is a bad example actually, but you can build code specifically for Linux. Because of course, if you have like WireGuard on Linux works differently than WireGuard on other platforms. So I had to, now I don't remember where exactly, in this config manager, which is runs at root. So you can use underscore platform.
Oh, so
you
see,
you have, you have, this only built on Darwin, so on my local machine. And then I say, okay, it's not supported on Darwin because I mean, this is just my development machine. And then you can say, okay, but here is the built is Linux.
Oh,
so
cool.
And then this imports a package that is only supported on Linux. So I build this package sync lines here that is only supported on Linux.
Oh, nice.
I only need to develop in Linux because to configure some things in or to get some information for WireGuard, you actually have to do system calls. And these system calls, like, they are specific to one platform. So when you write in Go, it's cross-platform. You can build it and then build it for any platform. But you cannot build these Linux packages because they wouldn't work on, let's say, Darwin. So you just say underscore Darwin, and then that's you say, okay, this is not supported, or you can do the implementation. Like, I somewhere have an implementation for both Darwin and, here, network.
Okay.
Like, how to determine the route for the default route. So actually, there's this procnet route. You see, so and it shows like this, and this you can just do as normal user as well. And here, the first one is your default gateway. But what is the interface of your default gateway? Is this one? But yeah, on Darwin, on the macOS, it's completely different.
Yeah.
I actually had some code here, but I removed it because it didn't work completely as I wanted, and I was like, I don't need it anyways.
It's good to play around with it, but yeah.
There's actually code. There's a library package for, not for Linux, but Linux uses like some Netlink or like some, I don't know what the name is anymore, but some library that is difficult to implement. But Darwin actually has a library like built in, like by default, like a default library that you could use. And then you can actually determine it because here it's like netstats r and something like that, and then if I grab on default, here are my default, and then you can basically filter on these flags, and then you say if this is the G for gateway, and then you get this one, like my EN0. But yeah, I removed the code because I actually did the work, and I was like, I'm not going to waste my time here.
We're not going to run that on Darwin.
No, not yet. That is the server component, right? Not the client component, the server component. So yeah, the client component, I find it actually, and I'm going to stop sharing my screen now.
Yeah.
I find it actually quite interesting that the WireGuard client is just available everywhere. Like with OpenVPN, that was just not a good client.
Yeah.
You would use tunnel brick.
Blick.
Because it was Blick. And even that one sometimes stopped working or was not.
Yeah. It was cumbersome for just connecting to a VPN in comparison to this one.
And this WireGuard is super lightweight.
Yep.
You know, one thing I would want in the future is, that's not going to be in the V1, but in a later version, is to make sure that you authenticate again over ORDC.
Yeah.
Like
every X amount of time, or
indeed. So we can if a user gets deleted from the identity provider, we can block access still, right? But there's a use case also that you want to re-authenticate every time, like supply MFA token or something. That you can do MFA through your identity provider. If you use one login, you have support for YubiKey and for authenticator. But maybe you want to have another layer where every time you log in, you want to provide either your login and password or even login password MFA or just MFA. And there's some different approaches. You can, like, I have seen other companies releasing their own clients. But that could also be a way to just block access until you authenticate. So we'll investigate that in a newer version. I think the first version, it's basically what you saw. Just download the profile, and we will be able to use it with our customers. Because the OpenVPN version, not ideal. And then sometimes what happens is like, okay, you run this OpenVPN version in a Docker container somewhere, then it crashes for some random reason. Crashes, you know, and also, you know, like you can run this on a very, very small machine, like on a Nano or something. OpenVPN, the way we were running it, we were running on small machines, but sometimes it would just break for some random reason. I don't know what the reason was actually.
Runs out of memory.
Yeah, OpenVPN itself probably needs some memory. Yeah, WireGuard must be having a lower footprint because you can easily run it on a, like, what is a Nano? Half a gig of memory?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you should be able to run it like that with a few clients, as long as you don't have a lot of traffic, I guess.
No, yeah, exactly, because then maybe you hit the bandwidth limit of the machine itself. But
yeah, and also, you know, everything runs on ARM64, right? So this machine that I spin up is an ARM64 machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, cool.
Because you have ARM64, so yeah, the price benefit as well. So I don't know. Maybe you should quickly look it up. I don't know. Does OpenVPN support ARM64? It should be, no.
I don't know, actually.
They support. Yeah. Now available for ARM64, yeah. It is available.
The access server.
No, it supports ARM64, the access server. I just went to the website.
Okay, I mean that. Yes, it's
available. I think we are just not very up-to-date anymore on OpenVPN access server because we have our own access server.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kind of let that be.
But yeah, I think it's for our customers it's a great alternative to the OpenVPN access server that we have, just to be able to quickly connect.
Not only for our.
Yeah, once we publish it on the marketplace, anyone can use it. I mean, if you just want to, I think we are gonna make a free version, right?
Yeah, with a couple of users.
Yeah, if you just want to have a small instance, personal instance Nano with one, two, or three users, I think we'll see. You just spin it up. Like, how quickly was it configured, right? So, like, you configure it in a few clicks, and yeah, you have it running, you download your profile, you connect, boom.
Exactly. That's how it should be. That's why we started with it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not like the other VPN products. I mean, they are great products. But it all starts with, like, this is our installation manual, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think, like, why are so many people still using Jenkins, you know? Because, you know, with Jenkins, it's like it's the same login screen. Like, give the token, boom, you have Jenkins. Yeah. You see what I mean? It's not like...
Just easy.
Here's this configuration file, fill out all the information up front. Then we will launch the UI, and then it should work. Now it's just like, okay, the UI, connect to OIDC, enable HTTPS for UI, and download add users, log in with users.
But especially those things, like the basic functionality is already there for what we use it for. All the rest are going to be improvements. We can also do like a call out for people. If you see features missing or something like that, let us know.
Yeah, what features do you want? What are you looking for? Yeah.
Exactly. So that's also important because we... developed it from our perspective, how we use it day to day. So let us know if you use it differently.
Yeah, also a good question is like, what enterprise tooling are you using that that you maybe are looking alternative for that is just too expensive? Because if I looked at like the only reason why we run this our own OpenVPN access server was that it just became too expensive to run it, right? The access server. I mean, you have old technology, but then you also have to pay the license. And I wouldn't mind paying the license if everything would work. But if it then takes so much time to configure and then doesn't work, then it's low effort to just create something yourself. And I think then in cloud and DevOps industry, there is a lot of tooling that is easily recreated that doesn't need to be costing so much money. Like Datadog, for example, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not saying that. I mean, of course, you have Prometheus and Grafana and all these other open source tooling, right? But sometimes there's like, maybe you want like one feature of Datadog, like the logging and the filter, and you just want it to work. You don't want to have to put it on Elasticsearch. You know, well, why do you even need Elasticsearch? You know, like you could have just, I don't know, like create a single file somewhere with a log, or like just make put the files in the street. Like exactly the same way ELS does it, right? ELS doesn't have Elasticsearch running for CloudWatch logs. They just have the files in the street and you just query it. Like you could store the logs in S3 and just write a nice UI to query the logs, and you would have like what most people are looking for in Datadog. Of course, like Datadog has so many features, but often you just want a few features, right? And if you then say, like you don't have to pay what was it that big customer of Datadog,
like 10 million or something like that. Yeah, it was
10 million in a quarter.
exactly.
Like maybe you can just pay like a couple of hundreds of dollars, have a file stored in a stream, still have a nice interface, you know, like stuff like that, you know. And I'm sure there are companies around, but most of them are actually also have very high pricing. But I'm sure there are definitely, if you listen to podcasts and stuff like that, there's definitely companies looking to disrupt existing tooling that is expensive to rewrite it with, I wouldn't say complete offshore teams, but just like with better tooling. Because, for example,
Newer technology or newer approach, basically.
Golang, and a bit maybe a bit of AI, and you can rewrite some tooling from scratch and very quickly have the features that you need to have.
Like the anomaly detection and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly. In the industry now, I think that we have now all these tools like generative AI that can help you, modern programming languages like Golang with modern libraries, that it doesn't take much time. In a couple of weeks, you have your MVP ready of some really expensive tooling, you know, like...
But only parts of it, because most of the time it's expensive because... Oh, you need OIDC? Oh, yeah, then it's enterprise version you need. Oh, you need stuff like that. Nope.
That's what I don't like. It's like an OIDC implementation is so easy, technically. It's just like the feature that all enterprises need.
Exactly. And that's why they put it in there. Like, and then that stuff like, yeah, shouldn't do that. But
I think stuff like the market, like Datadog is one example. It is ready to be disrupted, definitely. You know, like...
Mm-hmm.
If I look at the features that people use in Datadog, they use such a small subset of features that it's actually not that much time to rebuild, for example. Like you have the VPN, you have Datadog, yeah. What else is there? I mean, it's basically all the tooling that people use. Like, actually, what people do is they say, I don't want to run Datadog, so I will run the open source alternative. But the open source alternative is not always great. It's like Prometheus, Elasticsearch, and Grafana.
It's also very
bloated. And then they have the DevOps engineer, sometimes offshore, and then the DevOps engineer is going to implement it. Takes him 2-3 months to implement. Literally, if I give me 2-3 months, I rewrite the whole thing in a, like a, in myself, you know, like I don't like with the features that the customer wants. You see what I mean? So it's like you don't need 2-3 months to implement some open source. I mean, yes, like
obviously, yeah.
Obviously,
but
yeah.
But it's not the fault of that person,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Like, there's just so many
bells and whistles that are not needed all the time. Yeah.
And if you then go back, like, what exactly do you need? And then sometimes just the logging in the cloud provider is the solution. But if that is not the solution, there should be some other companies they're saying, like, and I'm sure they are, you know, it's just not easy to always find them. Like, we can give you the same what you're looking for, just at a very, very low price point. And if they're not there, then they will be there over time because...
Or like the VPN, run it themselves, basically.
Yeah, but the VPN is something that you always have to run yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That's the difference. Like we can run everything managed. Yeah, we actually didn't manage it. Why don't we just run the VPN in the cloud provider, in EOS? Because it's also clunky, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And super expensive.
Yeah.
Right.
Like absolutely. Super
expensive. Every user that you provision, this is like, it's just not worth for all small businesses. If you're an enterprise, yeah. But small business, not really.
And that's why they can charge at price point. Like, but it should be open for everybody, right? Simple as that.
Yeah, AWS is just like, here are my enterprise services and they are 10 times as expensive as they should be just because I know that you are an enterprise.
Yeah, and you will need them to be able to do certain actions. That's why we put the price
up. Well, I don't always need them, but yeah, I mean...
Well, like the VPN in like a lot of, maybe they have like Palo Alto machines or whatever.
Yeah, it's
like,
definitely a lot of VPNs on the marketplace. But they are also not cheap. And they also...
Exactly.
You then need to get a license from these vendors. And these licenses are quite expensive. And then you have to often you have to contact them. I don't know about Palo Alto VPN, but often it's like, I need to contact them. Like
pricing, contact us. Ugh.
The way we are planning it to deploy it on the marketplace is like, okay, you have like a small instance, you get 20 users with that or something like that.
Yeah, basically. You have to test it and see if it works as expected, so you don't have unexpected interrupts and stuff like that when there's a lot of people connected. But those things are to be determined, I think.
We'll spend some more time in adding the features that we need for the MVP.
Yeah, but definitely let us know if you see some features that are lacking, which there are a lot, but nevertheless.
We'll release it on the marketplace. I'll probably then put a link next to the video or something so that people can find it.
You're in the comments or something, yeah.
And then we will be our own users, right? So we have a lot of customers that are using our OpenVPN access
server. Eat your own dog food. Basically.
We want to replace it with WireGuard, something more modern. So we'll be working on that in the next coming weeks and months. So if something breaks in the VPN, we'll be the first one to know.
No, awesome. I think we can wrap up here for this episode. Already almost an hour in, so time flies.
It's going to be a lot of editing.
I was hoping
not to be to have to edit too much, but yeah.
Unfortunately, it's always a good thing. I hope people found some value in this. All right, Edward, see you soon. Take care.
See you soon. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.